and welcome to the Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup. It's time to get fired up. Make sure you find the Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts. Please rate and review the program. I'm your host, Wayne Lou. Big thanks to co-host Blake Murphy for holding it down last week while I was away. Nice little four-day weekend, you know, just enjoying, celebrating Easter.
And yeah, the Blue Jays did you a favor a little bit. By Thursday, we had a Jay show in place of the Raptor show. So why stick around for one extra show when you can get a little four-day weekend? You get some good time in?
I did get some good time in, yeah, thank you. I was able to get up to a cottage for 3 days and just moss out. Like, literally not do anything. I mean, it's, like, too cold to, like, really do cottage activities, so.
You say moss out?
Yeah.
Mossened?
Yeah.
Is that a verb now?
Just mossing, right. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. You just lay it on a rock. Yeah. It was good. It was an incredibly sports heavy weekend, with it being MLB opening weekend, Jays opening weekend, Sweet 16 and Elite Eight on both the men's and women's side. Good NBA slates, although a lot of the like marquee games didn't really end up all that interesting.
Sure.
Friday and Sunday. But yeah, heavy on the sports. How I like it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Matthew scored his 60th in there as well, which. Sure. Just make sure I check all the boxes of what was going on this weekend.
No, we're going to, I was going to try to do this bit where we're going to try to talk about anything other than the Raptors, who have lost their 13th straight, but I've changed my mind. Let's just get this out of the way. Then I'll ask you about the Blue Jays, how they're doing, and other topics. We're going to talk about NCAA tournament as well in segment two, around the NBA as well in segment two, but Raptors lose 135 to 120 to the Sixers. Raptors losing streak now hits 13. Got a little trivia, I guess, in regards to longest losing streaks in franchise history and the context around them. But we got to start with the game itself. Obviously, Kyle Lowry coming back to Toronto as a member of the Sixers. How did it feel to be on the receiving end of Kyle's trickery last night?
Yeah, it was fun. You know, Grady Dick getting the education in Kyle Lowry charge. And like early on, it was just like, Kyle was ready to go. Like, he hits a pull-up three in transition fairly early, draws that charge. He closes the game out with kind of he does the Garrett Temple, the, like, unexpected help side block late in the game, which is now the Garrett Temple because he did it once. and we got to do – there's no room for propaganda left on the show because no one's playing well. So we got to do that instead. No, it was fun, man. And, like, you see the degree to which in a game like that, like obviously Kyle didn't go crazy, right? He had 11 points, 10 assists in 38 minutes. It was a +7 in a 15-point game. That wasn't the best example of Kyle just kind of bringing a team along, like further competitive. Like the 76ers were going to win that game anyway. But what you've seen and why Kyle has so much value for these little things like drawing charges and understanding time and score situations and making unexpected plays is this is a Sixers team that has had to stay afloat without Joel Embiid, who might be back tomorrow, by the way, without Joel Embiid, without Tyrese Maxey for a lot of this while Embiid's been out. And you see the value of, and look, you need NBA caliber, like you need NBA rotation caliber guys for this to make a difference. You drop Kyle Lowry on the Raptors, they're not winning that many more games. But it's like a magnified version of the Garrett Temple effect where Raptors have looked way more settled and competent when Garrett Temple's on the floor, or they looked a little more stabilized when Otto Porter was on the floor early in the season. Kyle is doing that for the 76ers, but in a much more like intense competitive environment. But like Tobias Harris, while a good player, is not going to get you organized offensively, is not going to change the game with little plays defensively. Kelly Oubre is going to bang a lot of threes, but that stretch of games where Tobias Harris and Kelly Oubre led the 76ers in scoring for like seven straight games because Maxey and Embiid was out, like that only works for you winning wise if someone is making sure that that comes within the flow of the offense and is helping raise the floor of the defense without your best defender. So you got like a little micro look at that at the start of the game. And then he just kind of settled in. You didn't really notice him all that much in like the second and third quarter. It's like, it's okay, make a statement early. And then it's this game's gone on long enough. Let's put this away.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was the smart thing with Kyle is just like got a whole bunch of deflections, you know, as you would expect. I thought the Sixers overall were really disruptive. The thing is, it had no like rotations behind them. So if the Raptors did make a move and get to the cup, they were usually scoring. And the Raptors did shoot a good percentage last night, 52% from the field.
Rough Mo Bamba game defensively, and then Paul Reed as the backup center is like obviously there more for the offense than the defense.
Sure, yeah.
Like they were playing, I guess Tobias Harris would have been their like de facto center for some parts of that game.
Some Nico Batum as well. I felt like Batum.
Yeah,
was also,
whichever one of those guys is the five. Neither is a Garrett Temple when it comes to rim protecting backup five.
This is now the Garrett Temple propaganda podcast. This is what it's become. Yeah, on the Raptor side, I thought it was, again, just another chance to see maybe some of the young guys sort of like show you something. Grady had a pretty quiet game overall. I know you guys spent a lot of time on Friday discussing Grady's game. It felt like to me, Grady just didn't get involved that much in the first half. And then you saw him really heavily involved at the start of the third quarter. That's when he got his 7 free throws, which was great. You always want to see a guy be able to get to the foul line. But overall, just a kind of a quiet night for Grady. What did you think of Grady's game?
Yeah, I'm with you. He didn't seem to get into it that much. You wonder a little bit, does, you know, you're trying to be aggressive early on and you pick up that charge. Does that get in your head a little bit?
Sure.
Look, lots of players have picked up charges before. But you never know how that kind of sets the tone. I also just didn't think offensively, like, Bruce Brown had a better game than we've seen from him lately. And Kelly Olynyk had 11 assists, which was almost a career high. But there were big chunks of that game where, like, the ball just really wasn't moving very much.
Yeah,
and I don't think, like, at this point, even though Grady's improved, those are not the type of game flow situations where he's going to really thrive, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's not going to create for himself yet. He kind of needs the ball to be moving around for him to find his spots and things like that. So, I didn't think it was his best game, certainly. And some of that is, like, some of that's maybe the trigger he has, but also, like, if you're only getting 3 3-point attempts for your 3-point specialist in 31 minutes,
right?
That's he could probably stand to be more aggressive, but that's probably also a failure of your offensive movement and things like that.
For sure. I mean, he only got, what, 3 attempts up, made one last night for Grady. That was the big difference in the game. The Sixers made 24 threes. The Raptors only made 11. I mean, a lot of it did feel like it was a red hot shooting night for the Sixers, but in any case, like, I think just overall defensively, you know, you continue to see just a total difference or maybe even indifference from the Raptors in terms of trying to guard. And I know that's a really difficult ask, but I did think that, okay, you played Wednesday, then you're playing Sunday. You got time in to get a couple practices in. At least hopefully you can see some sort of semblance, but I don't know. I mean, I think that for me, what started the game off poorly defensively was I just thought Kelly wasn't really – showing you much there. And I know he's limited, of course, like he's playing out of position. He's older. He shouldn't be starting at center and there's no help around him. But I thought it was from like the veteran guys down to the younger guys, just nobody could really execute that well defensively. And that's sort of been a pattern I've seen all season. But again, they're losing regardless. You know what I mean? Like they could play some good defense and they're probably losing the game anyway, just based on the talent disparity. But I don't know. What are you seeing out of this defense? Like, is there any hope for you?
No, and I'm not seeing enough. And, like, there was I poked fun at it on Twitter a little bit, but, like, late in the game, Philly's red hot, and they go to zone. And so Synergy only classified one of those possessions as zone. I counted three, but the second and third possession were just, like, I guess they weren't executing the zone well enough for Synergy to decide it was a zone. But Philly scored on three straight possessions after the Raptors came out in zone. I think they scored 8 points on three possessions. And like, here's the key stat to me. And I know the way NBA judges contested shots is sometimes a little flimsy, but the Raptors were only graded as contesting 17 of the 43 76ers 3-point attempts.
Yeah. Right,
so
right.
That's like, when they say contest, they mean like there's a hand in your face. You're up in it.
Sure,
so,
sure.
So there, like, probably,
I could be contesting you technically from here.
Right. So there are probably some like lightly contested shots that aren't being captured in that, but you were only like up on a guy on 17 of those 43 three-point attempts. That's a little low. Like the league average rate is up around 50% of three-point attempts get classified as contested. So 17 of 43 is not really close to that. And especially when a team's that hot and doesn't have their like either of their interior scorers, right? Like if that was a stat in a game Joel Embiid played and you were like, we can't contest the three that well because we're sending help with Joel Embiid, or we don't want to contest the three that well because Tyrese Maxey keeps carving up without help defense and is living in the paint. It wasn't that kind of game.
No.
Those Sixers weren't there. So to me, that's pretty disappointing. And you mentioned how Philly was like very active in terms of like loose balls and physicality and stuff like that. And this continues to be, and this is mostly on the defensive end, but you notice it when it comes to like setting screens and running your actions and things like that. Too many of these Raptors have too much on the line in their careers to seem like they're going through the motions at this point to the degree that the Raptors often look on defense. And it's pretty disappointing. And I get that like teaching season, developmental, et cetera, but some of these guys have been in the league for 4 or 5 years and have their next contracts on the line here. And the Raptors just, I don't know, they should at least be in my mind, a team that is annoying to play against. And they're not that. Like Philly was way more annoying yesterday. And that is that's a part of their DNA because of certain personnel there. But yeah, that shouldn't be the case. Like, I don't know. You've lost 12 in a row. You're playing against a team that doesn't have two best guys. Yeah. You should be out there and like, that should have been a difficult win for the 76ers, not the Raptors hung around until we decided to put it away kind of game.
Right. And I know there's a certain response that's like, well, they're losing anyway. They're tanking. Like, what's the point of getting worked up about any of these things? But it's like, number one, you're still watching the product, right? And especially for the people there, I feel like it's like way different when you're in the building watching sort of the indifference on defense. It's just, it gets to you because you know that it's just bad basketball. I think some of the guys that I'm guessing you're talking about, Jordan Wara, who Darko has already sort of explicitly come out and said that, you know he could score, but we really want to make sure we teach him defense, essentially. He did say post-game that Jordan's one-on-one defense is getting better, but they're going to work to teach him team concepts, which it's kind of funny because you might say this for a rookie, but again, he's been in multiple teams now. And then also Jalen McDaniels, who does have a contract guarantee for next year, but especially with how limited he is offensively, you got to be really good defensively to stick. And I know he's got a contract next year regardless, but like, I just would not play him in any circumstances, even in these circumstances. I just genuinely wouldn't.
Yeah, and you only have 10 guys available to you last night. So one of the biggest coaching tools you have, even in a developmental window, right, is playing time, right? Like that's the carrot and that's the stick in a situation like this. But you don't have anyone else you can play. And maybe this changes when RJ and Quickly are back in the mix because you've got extra bodies and you think, right, hey, we'll just go a little smaller or whatever. Theoretically, you could have turned down the bench to Moge a little earlier than they did.
Honestly, he came out and he hustled. He immediately got an offensive rebound, got fouled.
Yeah, had a block.
He blocked a shot. Yeah, exactly.
So, like, even that is, like, Moge is not as good as Jalen McDaniels at this stage.
No.
But he's the only option Darko has to, like, take away playing time.
Sure, yeah.
So, I'm with you, man. Like Jordan Wara, again, we know he can score. When he came here and had a couple good games early, I felt a little negative having to be that person. But, like, we have 4 years of information on good teams. Like, Jordan Wara was on good Milwaukee teams. He has a ring.
Yeah,
not that he didn't play, okay, but like he has experienced this stuff. He has been around good systems and good defensive coaches and has played in an NBA rotation for 3 full seasons now on top of that rookie season where he didn't play a ton. We have a good idea who he is. And yeah, the defensive stuff hasn't really come along. He can get a bucket, but like, and you think on paper, like 6'8 Nick Young is a valuable thing. But like, if this team was remotely healthy, he'd be back to being in that 10th, 11th man role where he's only getting run if Darko expands the rotation. And that's what he was before this opportunity. And I guess the takeaway there for me is he had a window here where he could have shown, you know, he could have made a case where when guys come back, he's like the 6th, 7th man like he is right now. But instead, I don't think he's upped his, you know, spot on the pecking order if this team were healthy. He can absolutely get a bucket and he'll probably have another chance in the league somewhere because he can get a bucket and has some size. But yeah, are you repeating the $5 million or $4 million you're making right now? Probably not. You're probably playing on a minimum next year and $3 million this year. You're probably playing on a minimum and sticking in the league that way because yeah, the defense hasn't come along and it's been 4 years now.
I think it's a bit of a shame because sometimes you see him use his athleticism and he's bouncy. He had that great dunk. There was a big offensive rebound that he grabbed over two guys at one point. He's had a couple of nice blocks as well. Not that that's necessarily changed too much for him defensively, but there are these moments you're like, oh yeah, this is a 6'8 guy who is quite athletic. Like that's actually for the Raptors. You do have that sort of weakness in the rotation. Like that, ironically, the Raptors, formerly known as the Vision 6'9 team, is very much looking for a 6'9 player who can do a little bit on offense and actually guard. And that's where McDaniels has that chance to, you know, all season to really take it, and he hasn't done anything with it. And then Wara, since joining the team midseason, has that chance now to sort of run with it. But, I mean, yeah, I guess unless you see a little bit more defensively or even something more consistent defensively, like, it is difficult to sort of justify sort of keeping him around. Like, would you keep Jordan for next year?
I mean, probably not. Like, I thought he was part of that trade to make the salaries work. I didn't think that he was a long-term part of the future when they got him.
Okay.
If you want him back on a minimum, whatever. But he's also, like, again, he's 25 and has, like, 4 years in the NBA, 3 of them as a full-time rotation player.
Okay.
Like, you have a good idea of who Jordan Wara is. in the same way you have a good idea of who Gary Trent is. And I'm not saying he can't improve in things like that, mm-hmm. but like when you're laying out what the offseason looks like maybe he's in there in pencil as an option for a depth piece, but you're absolutely looking to upgrade the 6'8", 6'9" bench forward positions,
yeah, for sure.
even
for sure.
with Wara potentially there and Jalen McDaniels guaranteed for next year.
Right. Yeah.
Like you need to upgrade those spots, even if you want those guys. I mean, Jalen McDaniels, you're not going to have a choice. He has guaranteed money. Uh-huh. But even if you like Jordan Wara and want him around, you're still trying to upgrade that spot and push him back to a situation where he's fighting for minutes mm-hmm. instead of, you know, playing 30.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, hopefully we're not getting a repeat of this situation. We did see Bruce Brown finally play like what we expect Bruce Brown to do, which is like to come in, make the right plays, knock down the right shots, you know, do a little bit of playmaking, find the right moments, be aggressive, be disruptive defensively. Like, I wouldn't ever say that he was like a shutdown guy, like nobody can score on him, but he can be disruptive, clearly a smart player, heady player, run a couple of fast breaks. I thought he did everything really well last night. I guess my question is just like, why hasn't he been playing this well since joining the Raptors? And also, like, you know, is it too late to sort of, I don't know, do you think his performance with the Raptors has like changed his market value, because obviously we're still going to be looking to shop him again in the next available opportunity.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, it's probably his best game as a Raptor since that Bulls game early after he came over when the Raptors beat the Bulls.
That was his first game.
No. The other Bulls game. His first game was a Bulls game where he looked really good, but they played the Bulls again a couple weeks ago or a couple weeks after that.
Got you.
He was really good in the game they beat the Bulls.
Okay, right. Okay.
So yeah, his debut was against the Bulls, and he was really. And this is a
he
funny thing where, like, he came in on no sleep and just arrived and hadn't practiced with the team, and it was almost the best he'd looked.
Yeah.
So I think part of this is, I mean, look, there has to be a psychological element of you thought you were probably only going to be here for a short time. You didn't get traded. You thought you'd be playing playoff meaningful basketball right now. There's probably a component of that. Mm-hmm. There is absolutely a component of Bruce Brown is a guy who is going to look better around better players. He was on that Denver team, on those Brooklyn teams. Had some stuff on his own individually when he played on that, like the Detroit team or whatever. But he looks better around better players
because he
exists as a like cutter and connector. Mm-hmm. Like make the someone create something for you and you make the right read off of that. You're not the guy creating that read initially. Even when he was like kind of a pseudo point guard, it was
bring the ball up, got to put it in the post and then cut.
Exactly.
Yeah. Which is ideally what I thought he would do here.
Yeah.
But and like he's been playmaking.
Him and Kelly could have some synergy with that. But I think so I think that's a part of it as well, is like he's going to look better with better players. And then, yeah, there's probably an element of, you know, what am I doing here? I'm playing out the string. And I haven't talked to Bruce Brown about that. I'm not suggesting he's like mailing it or anything like that. But there's absolutely a psychological component to you won a championship last year. You got traded here and you thought it was going to be a way station trade and you'd be here for a handful of weeks. And now you're kind of, you know, waiting to play meaningful basketball again. In terms of his value, I think that this just kind of reaffirms that he's only going to have, like, he's going to make $23 million next year if the Raptors pick up his option or they pick it up with the intent to trade him. That's only going to be useful to a team that is competitive. He's not going to bring, I mean, who knows, maybe because he's a smart player, some situations like next year's version of this year's Magic team, they're like, hey, if we get another vet around, another smart guy, or what the Rockets did last year.
That's what he got signed to Indiana to do in the first place. Yeah.
Yeah, and like part of why they signed him was this creative contract where we're going to pay you way more than the mid-level.
Optionality.
There's the optionality of this deal in a lot of different ways. But in terms of his value, no, I think like only good teams should have been interested in what Bruce Brown brings in the first place.
Sure, yeah.
And like $23 million was going to be too much for Bruce Brown regardless, but it's like a $23 million expiring. Again, flexibility component.
I feel like, honestly, like I know the Sixers will not have Bruce Brown like first on their priority list, but he would actually look pretty good on a team like the Sixers, for example.
You'd like him to have a little bit more shooting in that spot, but let's say they walk away from Tobias Harris, who's a free agent after the year, and they strike out on Paul George. Do they try to approximate what Tobias Harris brought in like with a different type of player and you split that money into two guys? Is Bruce Brown one of those guys? Mm-hmm. I could absolutely see a scenario like that. He'd look very good in Denver still.
Yeah, sure.
And then, yeah, lots of teams could use kind of versatile bench pieces.
I mean, there was definitely like a market for him at the mid-level last year when he hit the free agency. It was just like, you know, Indiana came in with this gigantic offer and it created them that optionality to be able to acquire someone like Pascal Siakam without realistically touching too much of the rotation at all, right? So, I mean, I guess the hope is that, like, you just don't let it expire. Like, I don't want it to be another Goran Dragic situation where it's like, all right, you have him on the contract.
Or it becomes Thad Young?
Sure, yeah. Well, honestly, yeah. Wow, damn.
You going to attach a first to Bruce Brown for center in the offseason?
All the talk was he was going to get you a first in return.
Yeah, look, in terms of his market, I don't know. Like,
what are the options for the Raptors this summer?
Yeah, so they have a lot of options. So you can pick up the team option, and keep him as one of your players. You have him, hey, the free agent market isn't that spicy like we talked about last week.
Yeah.
We're going to keep Bruce Brown at $23 million. You can do that, but with the idea that, like, he'll have a market at the deadline, so we're going to play him, but there's not a deal we like right now.
All right.
You could pick up the option and immediately trade him. Like, you could trade him as early as draft night. You just have to pick up the option first. So you can't do the tricky, like, hey, send him out as $22 million expiring and bring salary back. You'd have to pick up the option first. So those are the options. You could also then decline his option, use the cap space, like we talked about last week, get up to $50 million in cap space, whatever. You could decline the option and then negotiate a new deal with him where it's, you know, hey.
More optionality?
Yeah. And it's it's a longer-term deal, maybe at a lesser annual value. You could also decline the option and find a sign-and-trade for him. That's like, then you're getting into, like, if you do that, there's almost definitely tampering because you had to decline the option in June and then a sign and trade can't happen until July. Like, there's definitely, but it's
right
by letter of the law, you could work something like that. So you've got a few paths here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But yeah, if you couldn't get a first for him at the trade deadline,
I don't know that
you're getting a first for him now, but like, could you take back a little bit of money on a younger, interesting player, pick up a future second or a pair of seconds or something like that? I think that'll probably be there for you still. And if it's not, then you just like you have to explore that stuff by draft night because you got to make that team option decision on June 29th.
Right. Right.
And then, you know, if you decline the option, you still have the ability to double back and re-sign him.
Right.
But yeah, you kind of have to know by draft night if those deals, even if the picks you're acquiring aren't in this draft, you probably got to know by draft night.
It does, looking at all the options, and obviously we don't know what's out there just yet, but I wouldn't say it's like how likely do you think he comes back to Toronto? Because I don't think it's like a guarantee that he's gone.
I don't think it's a guarantee that he's gone either. Because
Be a guarantee that he's gone either.
No, and like
I would just love for him to like buy into the role better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And who knows? Maybe he does when better pieces are back, right? Like he didn't look that great with like IQ and RJ and Scotty and
like,
Jakob.
Outright like negative.
No, and like you give him some time in that. And, you know, that's the one thing the Raptors have been doing an okay job of through all this is, like, continuing to run the offense the way that they envision, even when guys are back. You know, maybe Kelly's not a 10 assist per game guy when guys are back, but that part of it's been good.
Right.
So, I don't think the chances are zero because I think if there wasn't a deal that they liked there on draft night and the free agent landscape is what it is, this is a type of front office that I could absolutely see being like, well, we'll keep him and then we've got the option to flip him at the deadline and still pick something up.
They are very much like, if we have the player and an option, like not necessarily a player option or a team option, just some options with what to do with the player, that's better than nothing. And I do agree with that, but it does kind of like lead you in these moments where it's like they're kind of standing around doing nothing. And if you haven't done something, then you technically have the option to do something. But in any case, well, we'll see what's out there in the summertime. Real quickly, Kobe Simmons, Javon Freeman Liberty, the battle of third string point guard. You know, either guy Sully ahead for you right now?
I thought Kobe had a good game yesterday. Nice little offensive spark.
He's being solid for me.
And Javon is probably the one guy who's free from that criticism I said about like guys not like hustling for loose balls and stuff. Like he's always like trying to at least like if they get beat for an offensive rebound or whatever, trying to do the like poke free from behind kind of thing. Hasn't been all that effective. And obviously the Raptors are just not playing well generally. But there's at least an activity level there. Kobe just looks solid. Like Kobe, honestly, he looks like a guy who's spent 6 years in the G League and has been in the NBA before. And like the lights aren't that bright. Like,
it's chill from the play.
Is he good enough to be like a third string point guard in the NBA? Like probably, but the reason he hasn't been is because teams will go a little younger, a little less experienced in that role or whatever. And he's not too eligible anymore. So, for a guy like that, I think, the drop off from like third string caliber point guards to what's out there, like top point guards in the G League isn't that extreme. And he looks like a guy who's been there before, which is all you can really ask in those 10-day spots.
He also got a signed jersey from Kyle Lowry after the game, Kobe Simmons.
That's really cool.
Kyle Lowry signed it. keep pushing, never stop the work, be great. And that's just a really nice gesture from Kyle Lowry. I don't even know what the specific connection is there between the two of them.
I mean, maybe he's a Kyle Lowry fan.
Maybe, honestly. Yeah, that would lead you quite nicely to another contract. And then, yeah, we have been seeing more of RJ, who has been taking part in practices, and also Quickly, who I don't know if he's taking part in practices, but I've at least seen him in the gym getting some shots up and stuff like that. They're currently on a reconditioning stint because they had obviously missed some time. We will see if they do eventually return to the lineup. Of course, this is all against the backdrop of both of them losing people in their families. So, you know, again, it's just whenever they're ready. When they do come back, do you think it does change their fortunes in a substantial way? Because the Raptors have 8 games left in the schedule. And the 8 games are they play the Lakers tomorrow at Scotiabank. Then they go to Minnesota on a back-to-back to play at 8 p.m., which is going to be difficult regardless. Then they play in Milwaukee against the Bucks on Friday, which is always difficult. They return home to play the Wizards on Sunday at 6 p.m.
That's the one.
That's probably one, because the Pacers come into town on Tuesday after that. Pascal Siakam returns for the second time, but the Pacers are playing better. I don't expect the Raptors to win that one. The Nets, they do go to Brooklyn, which I'll be very curious to see what team the Brooklyn crowd cheers for, because I've seen Brooklyn now give standing ovations to Steph Curry and LeBron, which took place last night.
I mean, look, last night they were down 17-0 7 minutes into that game. I don't know who I'd be cheering for either. The Nets actually almost fought back in that game. But they were down 17-0 until, like, I think there was 5:26 left in the first quarter when they got on the board.
Yeah, that there are. I mean, the Raptors are pretty miserable, but I actually do think the Nets are actually somehow more miserable than they are. And then the Raptors play 2 games to finish the year in Miami against the Miami Heat team that realistically will still be playing for something. They need those 2 wins, so they'll probably be quite competitive. So, yeah, we'll see if RJ and IQ return, but do you see another win for the Raptors this season?
Yeah, I think it's got to happen Sunday at home against the Wizards. That one would also, if they lose that one, they tie the franchise record for losing streak. So there's this is like our version of the Pistons beating the Raptors, is you don't want to make history, you see the Wizards on the schedule, it's got to be that one, because the Wizards remain very, very bad. Obviously, they're only half game from Detroit for the worst record in the East there. They have not been playing good, bad. They snuck a couple wins. Like, they beat the Raptors, and they upset someone else.
Yeah.
They beat Sacramento shortly after that. And, like, Kings fans were rolling their eyes. Like, of course, you know, during this good stretch, they lose. Although, they're a bit of a mess. They lost Malik Monk now, too, in addition to Kevin Huerter.
Right.
And they're down out of a play. They're back into the play-in now. Mm-hmm. So they're in trouble. Anyway, in terms of who the Raptors are playing, these games matter to all of those teams except for the Wizards and the Nets. The Heat right now are half a game back of the Pacers to avoid the play-in.
Right.
So that is, you know, that's going to be a tough race. Even if Miami isn't in a playoff spot at that point, they're going to be looking to secure, you know, home court and the double chance in the play-in and things like that. So these games will matter to those teams. And certainly anytime you play a Western Conference team, those games will matter. I guess the Bucks are the one team maybe they'll be in who cares mode. But
I don't even know, man.
And it's only a couple days away. So, like, it's not like it's that far out. So I don't know. I think it's got to be Sunday against the Wizards. You could probably beat the Nets in Brooklyn.
Well, the last 2 teams the Raptors have been competitive against have been Washington and Brooklyn. We've seen them recently.
And Charlotte's the last team they beat. So they're competitive in this bottom division.
I would hope so. I mean, damn. Yeah. No, but I mean,
it's got to be Sunday against the Wizards. Like, that is you want to avoid the all-time longest losing streak in franchise history, and that's, like,
well, I was going to ask,
be a pride element too.
Is that important? Is there a pride element for the org? Is there that for you?
Yes.
You know, is it as Kyle Kuzma once said, at this point, it's like, just don't be that team.
Yeah, I think absolutely. In a franchise that has had as many bad years as this, you don't want to be the team that had the longest losing streak. You're already threatening one of the worst records they've ever had, like, non-expansion time.
Right.
It's the worst season they've had in over a decade. Like, this season is arguably worse than the Tampa season, and they spent that year outside of the city, holed up in a hotel, practicing in a conference room the whole year.
Yeah,
and this season is arguably worse. On top of all of that, like, you still only have a 45% chance of keeping your pick. So even, like,
least in Tampa, we came out of with Scotty.
Right.
Which is, like, fine.
I know that this doesn't really matter to the players. Like, how much do you care about a guy who might come in and take your job? But, like, for the franchise, there's no, like, little sugarcoating on this losing streak. You've slid one spot in the standings, yeah, and you're still only half a game clear of Memphis, and you only have a 45% chance of keeping your pick. So I think, yes, you should absolutely, like, I get it. The Grizzlies are on your tail, and the percentage could go down even less. You can win one game the rest of the season, and it should be, like, you shouldn't lose to the second worst team in the league on home court if a couple of your guys back in a franchise record tying situation.
Right.
I get it. I get the ping pong ball element, but, like, you want to end the season on a 21-game losing streak, the longest in franchise history, when this team has, like, been an expansion team and lost 17 in a row. Right. And I don't know, what was it? 2002 was when they lost 13 in a row last time.
13 in a row in 2011, 13 in a row in 2002, which, by the way, that year they still made the playoffs.
Yeah. But, like, like, RJ grew up a fan of this team.
Yeah,
He wants to, and I know RJ is dealing with much, much bigger stuff.
For sure.
But once he, you know, once he's back in a game, I assume the competitive element will come back.
For sure.
You don't want to be that.
Yeah, right. I mean, it is a difficult situation. I think the reason I asked this is because, like, I don't know, when you spend time around the team, like, it doesn't necessarily feel like they're on a 13-game losing streak in the same way. Like,
I mean, the effort level times is certainly not as if they're on a 13-game losing streak.
That's what I mean. Like, it's like the chillest 13-game losing streak ever. Like, it's almost like it's nothing to lose it. And I get it. Like, of course, there's a rational side, which is you lose these games to increase your lottery odds, which, by the way, you did surrender control of that. But let's just put that aside for a second. Like, it is the rational thing to do, I think, for the long term, to continue to sort of maximize whatever odds you have. But at the same time, it's like, it really does feel like it's just nothing for them to lose. Like, there's not even, like, difficult questions, or, you know what I mean? Like, the players are still, like, kind of, like, jovial. You know, the vibe is still the same. And it's just like, I guess the compared to Tampa, like, when they were losing like that in Tampa, and of course, like, the Tampa situation, they also had a lot of things going on, and including the fact that they were entirely displaced to a different country. But it still felt like gut-wrenching to lose all those games. And I think the longest it got to was like 9 in Tampa. Mm-hmm. So we're already long past that point. But this is just indifference. This is almost worse than like being sad that they lost. It's just like we don't actually care if they win or lose anymore.
And in the Tampa season, it at least felt like guys were like, to a stronger degree, taking advantage of the opportunity.
Yeah,
it didn't
sure.
really turn into a ton, but like, Stanley Johnson had some really good games.
Yeah.
Paul Watson's knees betrayed him after that. But, like, yeah. Paul Watson used that time to, like, make a case that he belonged in the NBA.
Sure.
Again, your knees disintegrate or whatever happened.
Yeah, right. Unfortunate.
Yeah. But, like, guys, at least it seemed, took advantage of that. And then, yeah, it was the Tampa situation sucked. But, yeah, you had what everyone anticipated being a very, very strong draft.
Uh-huh.
Although, yeah, even that one, like, I forget sometimes that they got some lottery luck to land number 4. Like, they finished with seventh worst record that year.
That was Fred sitting at the podium.
Yeah.
Like, him, I think, like, Ben Wallace was there.
You think they send Darko this year?
Ooh, that's a good question as to who they send.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's probably got to be Darko.
The 30th season, you send Vince?
Should it be Darko? It should be the general manager who made the trades in the first place. Like, I would love to see Bobby's reaction.
Yeah.
If they do keep the pick.
There's like a funny, so when we worked at the Score, you don't have rights to a lot of photos.
Yeah, yeah.
And anytime we needed a Masai photo, like, one of the only ones was him really, like, really sad at the draft lottery one year.
I think I remember that. That was probably, because the Raptors, again, they weren't in the lottery because, you know, they were a winning franchise. That was the year that they had the Knicks pick. And I think that's why Masai had to go for the lottery. Yeah. Because otherwise we were not in the lottery back in the day. But
maybe that's a conversation for those final couple shows.
Who's going to, honestly, you know, we will have that conversation. So as you mentioned, there have been other two 13-game losing streaks that they've now tied. Back in 2011, back in 2002. The 2002 one was real interesting. Just going through some of the games. The 13th game that they had lost to the Dallas Mavericks. 122-103, the Raptors lost. That dropped them to 29-34 on the season. This is coming off a year where, by the way, they had like their best year of franchise history to that point. The starting five was actually pretty good. Like, I actually can't believe that this team was on a 13-game losing streak. Keon Clark, Vince Carter, Antonio Davis, Alvin Williams, Jerome Williams was the starting five. Then Del Curry, Mo Pete, Chris Childs, Hakeem Olajuwon coming off the bench. Like, that's, I mean, it's not 13-game losing streak level bad. And they did ultimately turn it around and make the playoffs.
Yes. So they not only did they lose 13 in a row, they lost 17 of 18. Because right after they broke the streak, they lost 4 in a row more. But then they won 9 in a row after that. So they had lost 17 of 18 and then won 9 in a row. I believe that was the year Vince was hurt down the stretch and they made the big push back to get into the playoffs and then had like a good series against the Pistons.
Yeah. I just, to me, I wasn't around for that team, but it just felt like that team wasn't so bad. The team that lost 17 games in a row, that was that year they finished 16-66. Goodness. That team definitely had like the players on paper. So they started the season 1-3, right? They lost to Miami, lost to Atlanta, lost or won against Golden State. Then they lost 17 straight. So they were what, 1-19? And the final loss in that third 17 game losing streak, they played the Charlotte Hornets and the Raptors lost 95-82. The team on paper then was like, okay, yeah, I could totally see why this team was losing. Damon Stoudemire, Walt Williams, John Wallace, Oliver Miller, Marcus Camby, Reggie Slater, Zontabach, Sean Respert, T-Mac as a rookie coming off the bench as an 18-year-old. Like,
yeah. It's tough. The other 13-game losing streak they had in 2010, 2011 was like a pretty solid team, just wasn't there yet. Amir, Jose Calderon, Sonny Weems, DeMar DeRozan, Andrea Bargnani, Ed Davis. So they had all the young guns.
Yep.
They had Calderon. They had Bargnani, Jared Bayless and Julian Wright as the seventh and eighth man.
Oh, goodness.
And then they were playing Trey Johnson and Alexis Ajinsa.
Trey Johnson? Who
yeah.
is Trey Johnson? How do I forget this man?
Yeah, he played seven games for them that season.
Trey Johnson. Man, that's when 2K generates the players to like, you know, fill up rosters, that they generate Trey Johnson.
Real name Clinton Johnson.
Okay.
But right. Went by Trey. Yeah, that's the only Goodness. Thing I remember about him is that his name was Clinton, but because he was the third, his name, he went by Trey.
Got you. Oh, was that Linton Johnson
Clinton.
The third? Oh, I know. Yeah, okay. I remember Linton Johnson the third.
Clinton. Yes. With a C.
That's wow. Okay. All right. My last question is, do you think this Raptors team beats either of those two other teams or three other teams that have lost 13 or more in franchise history? I don't think they beat the Vince team. Let's be honest.
They don't beat the Vince team. I don't think they beat the Young Guns team. Like that team,
that's debatable. That team
only
won.
Yeah, that team only won 22 games that year, and they were the worst defense in the league.
Wow.
But
Jay Triano vibes.
Yeah. I guess I think I'm just giving like, well, Jose was a steady vet at that point. And
I mean, if it's Jose versus Javon or Kobe Simmons, like let's be honest, you know, Jose is going to win that matchup.
Yeah. Just a little bit more offensive punch on that Raptors team.
Right.
And then, I don't know.
They probably beat this 17-game losing streak team, man. I don't know.
Probably. I guess it comes down to, like, Damon's the best player in the game, and how much does that matter?
Yeah.
But,
I mean, wow.
Give me teenage T-Mac on these Raptors. So there's something
dude,
to...
Dude, honestly, at that point, that would have been what I was watching for. Because if I start the season 1-19...
Yeah. I mean, you would have been saying like T-Mac should start and play 30 games or 30 minutes a game. Yeah.
Fair enough. Okay. We're long overdue for a break. We're going to take that break. Been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spice Soup. When we come back, let's talk about the Canadian who's putting up 40-16 in the NCAA tournament.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Wayne Luke. Continue to be joined by co-host Blake Murphy. I'm going to ask you one more NBA question before we get to the NCAA tournament, which has been awesome both on the men's and the women's side. The Mavs last night, they snapped the Rockets' win streak at 11 straight games. By the way, shout out to the Rockets for turning their season around. Like, they lose Şengün. They're already sliding in the standings. It looked like all the momentum they made this season was all for naught. And then all of a sudden, they turn it around. Jalen Green goes, like, just incredible, right? To the point where people are drawing, like, young Kobe comparisons. I think that's probably going a little too far. But, you know, still, they're playing at a great level. They win 11 straight, except for the fact that they run into the Mavs and the Mavs just crush them. Mavs have now won 7 straight, and that's the longest win streak now in the NBA right now. Luka, every time the Mavs do well, of course, you kind of have to have the Luka MVP conversation. And, you know, we've had that on the show a couple of times. Even just taking aside from the MVP, though, the two shots that the one that he made pregame and the one he made during the game as well. Walk us through those, Blake, as somebody who has no chance to ever make those type of shots.
Ridiculous stuff. The one pregame where he throws it, he shoots it behind him, behind his head, or like in front of him, but like directionally behind him, off the Jumbotron and back into the basket.
First off, how high up is the Jumbotron in the first place? Like that takes a lot of effort just to even throw it onto the Jumbotron.
Yeah, like I don't think you could do it at Scotiabank once it's all the way up.
Exactly. Yeah, right.
So
right,
either
right.
It's a lower one or it was still in the process of going up pregame or something like that.
Okay.
And then the one in-game.
And he bounced, by the way, he bounced that off the Jumbotron like 40 feet up in the air, and then it like banked in.
Yeah. Crazy.
Unbelievable.
And then the one in the game is like he gets the ball above the break, and like, you know, at first, because I wasn't watching the game, so I only saw the clip. And at first I'm like, okay, is he going to like, he catches it like out near the logo. Mm-hmm. And then he's like almost pinned in at half court at one point, like above the hash mark. And I'm like, oh, is he going to just like hit a crazy three? And no, it was even crazier. He's dead. Yeah. He's picked up his dribble and he does like a post move up and under like you do to try to lose a post defender and finger rolls from like three quarters of a step inside the 3-point line and it goes in. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. He's the guy that you're playing a poker. Like, he only has like one out, but he somehow always draws to that one out. Like if it's you can't pin him down.
If you're the defender and it's that late in the shot clock and you've done that good a job, you think there's like a 99.9% chance you have either forced a brick, a turnover, or a shot clock violation.
Yeah.
And then he finger rolls from just inside the 3-point line.
Right. And that's not even the best shot the Mavs have hit in the month of March. Like, the Kyrie game winner was still better than that. But in any case, I mean, you know, we'll see where Luka ultimately ends up. He's, more importantly, played 65 games already. Now. Mm-hmm. So he's qualified. He's eligible to make All-NBA. He's going to make All-NBA. There's no question about it. He should be first team, too, as well. And having made All-NBA, he's now eligible to sign an extension in 2025. So this is like 2 years in the future now. But worth $346 million on his next extension, which obviously he will receive. Every team in the NBA will line up to pay Luka Doncic that amount of money. But to put $346 million into perspective, KG, the big ticket, right? Known for a long time for having a massive contract. That's already more than his total career earnings. LeBron, in his total career today, and LeBron obviously, you know, is LeBron, $435 million, at least made just straight off of playing the salary that he receives from playing in the NBA. Of course, he's made all sorts of endorsements and all that kind of stuff. But, like, yeah, 346 would be already two-thirds of what LeBron has made, or three-quarters of what LeBron has made in his entire career. And, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't think it'll happen with Luka, but I do think that we will reach a point where an NBA player is going to make $1 billion just straight up on their career earnings. And to put $1 billion in perspective, so Luka's deal is going to be about $70 million per year once he signs it on the Supermax. You would need to be playing 14 years at the Supermax at $70 million per year to get to $1 billion in earnings.
Which, like, you can't do because the rookie scale contract and stuff like that. The person who's going to have a chance to get there next is Wemby because he was the number one pick, so his rookie scale is already higher than we've anticipated or than we've ever seen. If the cap goes up significantly by the time his rookie scale extension comes around and he's hit all NBA, so he gets the 30% rookie scale max instead of the 25% and then continues on from there. But there's so many ifs.
Right.
But yeah, Wemby's got a nice head start because Luka came into the league at a time when the salary cap was a little lower. So he wasn't a number one pick.
Right, that's true.
And Luka's like young. Luka's only 25. Like, he just turned 25. So in terms of like potential career earnings, there's a huge path there. But like, Wemby's got the window here to set some records.
Yeah, that will be, I mean, Wemby honestly might walk out of him playing in the NBA, if all things go well for the next 20 years. He might walk out of this whole thing with between earnings from his team and earnings from endorsements, like probably like $2 billion just off of playing in 20 years, which would be
incredible. Could he guard Zach Edey? And DJ Burns?
That's a great question because, you know, at this time of year in basketball, obviously, you do turn your attention towards the collegiate level. Zach Edey and Purdue won last night. It's been really fun watching the Zach Edey experience because it's not quite like when you watch Shaq back in the day because he doesn't have that level of athleticism, not even close. But it is still where it's like he's so dominant and he's just going to park himself around the elbows, he's going to flip, he's going to turn, but he's going to just post up the whole time. And the whole objective of the entire offense is to get him the ball, and then he just crushes whoever is guarding him. He's drawing like 10 fouls a game. It's like an older version of Shaq in a way. But in any case, what are your takeaways from watching Zach Edey draw 40 last night?
Game was so fun. Like Dalton Knecht on the other side also dropped 37.
Right.
So like they were going back and forth. And then Edey hits this stretch midway through the second half where, like, I think he scored 12 or 14 straight points for Purdue.
Sure.
And it's just like, this is it. It's time where the offense is just Zach Edey. And, like, he got 22 free throw attempts. And I know some people don't love that. Like, it slows the game down or whatever. Right. The refs are not, like Tennessee was
what are you supposed to do? Like, they're clearly hacking him.
Also, Tennessee was, like, one of the highest fouling teams in all of college basketball this year. Right. Like, they're a physical, that's their identity. Mm-hmm. They're going to play really, really physical. So I thought it was great. Like, the fact that, you know, the deeper we get in the tournament, the better the teams are, the more teams have worked on their game plan and known Zach Edey was a possibility. And, like, everyone knows Zach Edey, he's maybe going to win 2-time National Player of the Year and things like that. Mm-hmm. But in these environments where, like, yeah, in a regular season conference game or a preseason, pre-conference tournament game, maybe you're not worrying about changing your defense all that much because 5 games in the season, whatever. Yeah. And Zach Edey's not playing 39 minutes and things like that. But in these environments where every coach and every team has game plan to try to limit Zach Edey, to be able to drop 40 and 16 in this environment is really, really cool. And I think you've gotten to see, you know, why he has a reputation as, unlike some of the criticism that gets levied at, like, the high free throw, they're just bigger than everyone, big man. Like, he's tough. He's physical. He wants to be in there stuff.
Yeah.
You also see, like, how the touch has improved around the rim and things like that. The free throw shooting wasn't the best yesterday, but generally that's an area he's gotten a little better as well.
He's, like, above 70%. That's pretty good for a guy going to the free throw line 20 times.
Yeah, and, like, loved the quote yesterday about, like, they don't know what's inside us. We can't play the whole quote because there's some swear words in it.
Honestly, that took him by surprise, too, because I felt like Zach was, like, he went to Leaside. He's this, you know, half Chinese guy, too, and, like, I'm certainly invested in rooting for Zach Edey for sure, but, like, you know, he just always seemed to come across as really almost soft-spoken in a way. And, yeah, I guess I wasn't familiar either. I do always see a lot of skepticism online and in the reactions to Zach
Edey. Why would we appreciate, like, what he's doing
Everyone's like, well, you know, you can run a pick-and-roll on him. He's not going to move his feet. That's fair. Like, I actually do think that that's totally fair. But, like, we're also ignoring the gigantic, like, offensive production that a guy who is, again, gigantic, 7'4", can really produce. So I'm curious to see where he goes in the draft. I mean, I know there's obviously a Raptor connection. Who knows? Maybe the Raptors ultimately go in that direction. But, like, yeah, what do you make of Zach as a prospect?
Yeah, the questions are going to be on the defensive end. Offensively, it's not, you know, he hasn't really shot the three because Purdue never wants him outside of the paint. We don't really know what his passing looks like outside of passing at a post doubles and things like that. The degree to which he's improved quickly offensively, his touch, improved his footwork, things like that, I think that gives you some encouragement. With his player type, I don't think you ever really worry that much about the range other than, like, maybe that trailer three. They're like, hey, you're the last man back on offense. Can you just knock down that no
JV
one's at the top
three?
Exactly. Yeah. Knock down that top of the key, no one's picked you up yet three. Defensively is where the questions are, and he's improved in that regard, but there's still a question of lateral quickness, hip mobility, you know, your ability to turn your hip. And, you know, some of this is also the way Purdue uses him, which is obviously really, really valuable defensively, but he's so, so important to that team that my read on it, and I have never asked the coach this, but, like, I think sometimes he doesn't contest as many shots as you'd think for a 7'4" guy because they absolutely under no circumstances can survive him being in foul trouble.
Right.
So it's more of, like, use your body to take the pain away. Mm-hmm. And if a guy can get a shot off, like, be very, very careful with what you contest. He had the big block late last night.
He did.
That was his only block of the game. And really he didn't contest a ton of shots in the paint with length and physicality and stuff like that. I think some of that is Purdue wants him to be a little more conservative and make sure he stays on the floor. But these are going to be the questions. That NBA team's going to draft him.
For sure.
You know, pre-tournament, Sam Vecenie pegged his range starting in, like, around 18 and into the early part of the second round. Some team is going to draft him for sure. The strength and conditioning program this offseason, can we work on the hip fluidity and things like that?
Aspect.
But, like, the path to him being a valuable offense first bench center is like, how do you not kick the tires and see what you can get out of that in, like, a like, I don't know what the comp is because no one else is 7'4", 300 pounds other than, like, Boban, who's had, like, a nice career off of being a cool guy that everyone likes having around.
Yeah.
But, like, the path to him being a useful offense versus bench big is, like, pretty straightforward. You just got to get the defense to a level where you don't give all those points back. And I think the improvement he showed and the toughness he has there, I'd bet on it in the late first, early second for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, look, the Raptors do have picks in that range. So we'll see if they ultimately go in that direction or maybe Jen Zebo. G.J. Burns is really...
What a great nickname.
It is an amazing nickname, and he has a great game. You know you're doing well when Jokic compliments your game. But anyway, that does it for us today. I've been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's New Chunky Spice Soup. It's time to get fired up. Big thanks to our producers, Amit Mann, board producer Lance Kennedy, Jennifer Olenek-Davidson, Jared Manetta helping behind the scenes. We'll be back to talk tomorrow.